Morning, everyone.
Hello, good morning.
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 Filter. So reduce the filter for the work. Now, one thing that I want to point out is that finding unique values inside of them.
Everybody there? Okay. Good morning, everyone. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, good, good. We're ready to get started.
I'm not a kid.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like he can hear you.
Okay. Mike, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Oh, we have two mics. Mike Wilson, Mike Garrett, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, okay, thanks. Yeah, I think we're ready to get started.
All right.
Can Mike Wilson here did he respond?
Yes.
Okay. Thought I heard someone. Okay. The time is now 9:04, and I'm calling to order the regular quarterly meeting of the Texas Property and Casualty Insurance Guarantee Association Board of Directors. This is a virtual video conference only board meeting that is being conducted in accordance with Governor Abbott's March 16th, 2020 directive on virtual and telephonic open meetings. Currently, we have 8 board members with 1 public member vacancy, and all members are present, so there is a quorum. We are joined today with Board Counsel Shelby Betts and from TP Siga. Marvin, I'm not sure who besides you is available. This is just for Shelby in the minutes. Who else is from staff?
Okay, it's John D'Amato, Jesse Bowie, and Verda Wren.
Thank you. And then it looks like from the Zoom, and please tell me if I've missed anybody, from the Department of Insurance, we have present John Alexander, James Kennedy, Brian Rui, and John Peters.
Caitlin Mark from the Texas Department of Insurance.
Caitlin, I'm sorry, Caitlin Mark.
Oh, no problem. Thanks.
Yeah, Joe Betsy. I didn't introduce. Can you come down for a second? A lot of you will get information from this individual. Dee had left the organization. We have Stephanie Hernandez now, so I wanted to kind of introduce you to her. She has the mask on right now, but we'll take it off later on.
Hi.
So with that, thank you.
Welcome, Stephanie. Thanks so much for all your help in getting us organized.
Thank you.
I do want to provide an antitrust admonition because members of the board are competitors in the marketplace, and therefore we must all exercise care in avoiding any discussions that might give rise to an allegation of violation of state or federal antitrust laws. We'll move on to item 2 on the agenda, which is a review and approval of the summary of the official minutes of the September 24th, 2020 board meeting. Do I have a motion to approve?
I move to approve.
Is there a second? Second. Okay, so we have a motion by Director Wilson, a second by Director Reiner. Is there, are there any questions or any discussion? Then all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed or any abstentions? Hearing none, the motion passes unanimously. Next, we will go on to the to our executive session. So the time is now 9:07 a.m. and is authorized by Section 551.079 of the Texas Government Code. The board will adjourn into closed executive session to consider the Texas Department of Insurance Rehabilitation and Liquidation Oversight Report. We will move on to agenda item number 4. Marvin?
All right. With that, I'm going to go through a review, a summary of the board packet so everybody has an understanding of all the information that's in there. What we're presenting today are bullets. That's what the different chairs of the different committees will be presenting. But in the board packet, the nominating committee, and the chair of the nominating committee is Mike Garrett, who will be making a report. There's an annual requirement to elect officers each and every year, as well as a parliamentarian. So Mike will be making a recommendation to the board concerning that as chair of the nominating committee. That'll be followed by the executive committee, and where our chair, Joe Betsy Norton, will be speaking to finalizing or at least explaining the final efforts on the plan of operation, as well as responding to a letter we received, not only us, but other guaranteed funds received from the General Counsel, from the Texas Department of Insurance in reference to some governance issues. And the final part that she'll be able to, that she'll present today, is the appointment of board committees for 2021. So everybody has an opportunity to participate. With that, I wanted to mention the chair of the Finance and the Audit Committee is Tiffany Reiner. She's having some technical difficulties with her computer, so John will be presenting the information that's in the board packet. What I'd like to ask everybody to do is just to turn to the Finance and Audit Committee agenda information. And if you look on that, the bullet points that will be shown on the screen are there. But if you turn to that second page, prior to every board meeting, there are committee meetings, and the Finance and Audit Committee meeting met. And included in that packet, if you look at that first page, are the notes from that committee meeting that has all the details of what was discussed and what will be presented today. What I wanted to point out to you, if you look at the first page of the minutes, we have the draft operating budget. We have numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. And that coordinates with the A, B, C, the different tabs. And I'm going to give you an example. If you look at number 1, that's tab A. That's the draft operating budget. The board asks staff every year to present a budget. We've been doing it for 28 years. And the budget is a draft budget is presented in September, so the board has an opportunity to look at all that information and come back, and then a final budget is presented in December. And this is the final budget that we're presenting to the board for action. But if you look under tab A, that is all the information on the budget. And if you follow right down, I want to point out on number 2 is B. If you look at that, that's Plant Moran. That's the audit plan. We have a requirement to present an audit plan each and every year. And that comes in terms of a financial audit, but the board can also select other audits that they want to complete. If you just look under tab B for a second, the audit plan is there, but there are several attachments. One is under C, an audit engagement letter. And there's another component that's attachment D, which is a agreed upon procedures for the engagement letter. This is something that will be presented to the board. It's actually authorizing the audit to take place and all the work that has to be done in reference to it. And after that, if you could just go back to that information, then everything lines up. Three, if you look under tab E, the information technology update is there, and then the information operates accordingly. I wanted to point that out because it's, since this packet is so vague, simply because it has the budget information in it. So you'll be able to look at that. After we complete the presentation of that information under the budget, we'll go back to the Human Resources Committee, and the chair of the Human Resources Committee is Mike Wilson. And if you'll look at the tab under Human Resources, that gives you the information that'll be presented today. There'll be bullet points that are on the listing, but if you turn to the next page, that's the minutes of the meeting that were held. We hold meetings about a month or so prior to the board meeting, where the committees get together, and then they'll come forward with recommendations to the full board. But if you're looking for a lot of the detail, that's in the packet. You can turn to those particular areas, and we'll pretty much follow suit in reference to that. After the Human Resources Committee report, we'll have the big hitter up as Jesse Bowie. This is his final farewell report. He's been smiling all day. And he'll do a claim summary. And after completing the claim summary, we'll go into the second executive session, which will basically be for the board to complete the litigation report, my annual evaluation, and any other items that need to be discussed at that point. And with that, I will turn it over to the chair of the nominating committee, Mike Garrett.
Hey, Marvin, mm-hmm. Were you going to provide any kind of update on the COVID-19 pandemic?
Yes.
That was on the agenda.
Yes. Let me do that. The prior meeting, we had kind of expressed what we had done here. Nothing has changed. We're still doing temperature checks. Masks are a mandatory requirement within the office. Everybody has the hand sanitizer on their desk as well as wipes. We've restricted access to the organization. We have no one coming into the organization. We've restricted training. We're not doing any type of events in terms of eating. So it's pretty much what we reported on last time. There's been no changes to our particular operations. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's kind of an update. If you have any questions, I'll address that. But the next part of that is in reference to our retiring claims director. And I wanted to share with the board, Jesse actually started here in March of 1994. He came in as a supervisor. And it was funny, I was talking with Mark Tasui, and Mark mentioned that the final candidates for the positions for his replacements were from insolvent carriers. And I told Mark, we've had pretty good luck with insolvent carriers, because Jesse worked for TEIA ECC down in Beaumont, Texas, where I first met him, and I was actually the risk manager for the city of Beaumont. Went to their office, and they wanted to make sure that I met Jesse, because he's the only person that looked like me in the entire operation. So I knew Jesse. He had a very good reputation as it relates to claims. I left Beaumont, of course, and we had the first multi-state insolvency in the history of Texas when TEIA went out of business and ECC went out of business. And I heard Jesse. I knew Jesse was still working for the company. I picked up the phone and I called. And I asked Jesse if he would be interested in a job at the Guarantee Association. I said we were interviewing for different positions. And Jesse told me no. He told me Jesse has an accounting degree. So he said, no, I'm just going to go do accounting. And I said, you're not an accountant. I said, just go down and interview. We're interviewing in Houston. And the job is in Austin. Once I said the job was in Austin, I think Jesse came, got on a plane that day and came here. So from there, he was the supervisor, March of 1994. He moved on after 5 months to become the claims manager for our organization. And then in 1997, He was appointed as the claims director. He's operated in that position ever since. Is that correct?
Yep.
Yeah, he kind of gave me a funny look, so he's doing that now. He's been operating in claims is what we do. And this organization, the foundation of this organization, is operating the way that it operates because of how Jesse's formed this organization. I want to share with you, I got a letter from the NCIGF because Jesse has also been involved as one of the lead people on the national scene. He chairs a number of the committees for the NCIGF. So this letter is from Roger Smeltzer, who's the president and CEO for NCIGF. It says, "Dear Marvin, thank you for reminding me that Jesse Bowie will soon be retiring from TP Sigma. Not that his retirement is a good thing for either you or the Guarantee Fund system. I'm glad to join in the celebration of Jesse's many contributions throughout his career. Out of an entire nation of Guarantee Fund claims experts, Jesse has always been among my favorites. His expertise is valued by all of us. Jesse is dedicated to his craft in the most admirable way possible. He demonstrates a clear passion for the policyholders TP Sigma serves and is a fine advocate of the law on which policyholder protection in Texas is based. I have always respected the depth of knowledge and compassion that he brings to his work and the influence he has throughout the system. Filling his shoes will be quite the task. Even better, Jesse is a fine human being who has brought credit to TP Sigma and its state-based property casualty guarantee fund system. He is well-liked and respected by his peers and never seems to lose his enthusiasm. I will never forget the dinner we shared at the Sergia meeting many years ago when he was just as excited to talk about the most recent book he had read as he was about the latest claims issues. Jesse is a wonderful colleague and we're lucky to have him on our team for so long. Please let Jesse know that I wish him nothing but the best in his next chapter, and if there's anything I can do for him, I hope you will let me. My best to you and especially Jesse. Sincerely, Roger Smeltzer." So I wanted to share that because he's had an impact not only here with our organization, but nationally as well. He's well thought of, and he's going to be missed from a national perspective because everybody's looking at him because he's probably one of the oldest members at the NCIGF in terms of leadership. So everybody's looking to him now because of his 26 years there. So I wanted to just share that with you and thank him for his time. And John?
He's muted.
John, you're muted. Okay, there you go.
Thank you. Listen, I'm especially glad to be here today and to be able to say a few words and recognize Jesse. He's been at it a very, very long time, and much longer than the years I've spent with TDI. But I did want to mention a couple of things I looked at to mark this occasion. And, you know, when you look back over that many years and someone who has, you know, devoted themselves to a career in claims, what that means to me is someone who's been devoted to the service of others in need. And I went back and asked to staff to just take a look at the number of receivership estates, even the ones just from Texas, from that time period. And surprising to me just how many there have been, and stop and think that Jesse had a part in each one of these. For example, beginning in 1994, there were 84 open receiverships, and 65 of those were for property and casualty companies. Since 1994, there have been 31 new property and casualty receiverships. So we're up to 96 total P&C receiverships in the last 26 years. And it's safe to say that Jesse had his hands in them one way or another. Just remarkable. Today we have 28 open receiverships at TDI, and 14 of those are property and casualty. And what I will remember for years to come is what it's been like in my time with TDI to work closely with Jesse and Marvin on these companies as they come up. Obviously, you've seen what goes into this, but it's all about the communication. And we start the communication as early as possible, and then comes the collaboration. And that's what I've noticed in Jesse, is that dedication to collaborate and move into a clear organization of how we're going to approach the next one of these things. Most recently, as you know, we just finished talking about ACCC. Before that, what was it, HGIE we're involved in, and Windhaven National, and so on and so forth. But I've enjoyed the way that Marvin, Jesse, and myself have been able to quickly get on a call and talk about the dynamics of any one of these things. And so let me just wrap up by saying that on behalf of Chief Deputy Commissioner Doug Slape and everyone at TDI, we recognize you, Jesse, for all these years of service and wish you the very best in retirement.
Thank you.
Jesse, just on behalf of the board, we just really want to thank you for all you've done. You give us a lot of comfort and not to have to worry. You've always had a steady hand and just managed things spectacularly, and you've left really big shoes to fill. But we very much appreciate all you've done for these 26 years.
Thanks so much.
All right, Marvin, did you have anything else, or are we ready to move on to Mr. Garrick?
No, we're ready to move on. That's enough about Jesse. He's gone.
All right, we'll move on to item number 5.
Okay, thanks, Joe Betsy. Report from the nomination committee. The nomination committee recommends that the current officers for Tipa Siga continue to serve in the same capacities for the next year. Consequently, I would move for 2021, Joe Betsy Norton be elected as chair, Mike Garrick be elected as vice chair, Stephanie Reiner be elected as secondary treasurer, and Mike Wilson be elected as parliamentarian. That would be my motion.
All right. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Are there any questions, any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Hearing none, then the motion carries unanimously.
Chair, can you clarify, was that Tiffany Reiner who seconded?
Yes, it was. Sorry, I should have repeated. Yes. All right. We will now move on to item number 6, the Executive Committee. And I'm sending y'all an email. I had the first item is the report on the status of the amended plan of operation. We did get everything finalized and submitted to the department, and I believe John has sent it on its way through the whatever layers it needs to go through to get final approval. And I guess that'll be from Doug Slape. Is there anything more to add, John?
No, just that's it. We appreciate your input and the suggested edits. We do not have any objections to those. They were minor in nature. And so the process now is to prepare a summary memo and get it over to Doug for final sign off and approval. And my hope is to get that done before the end of the year.
Thanks so much for your help, and James for and Patty also just for helping us to get this done. I think it's in a little bit better shape, a little more modernized, a little easier to read, and a little more accurate on what we actually do.
So, I agree. Thank you.
All right, and board members, you all should have had, there was a copy of that in the email that I sent to you, just for your records. The next item is the letter from the Texas Department of Insurance General Counsel regarding corporate governance and best practices. We will talk a little bit about that in a minute when we get to the committees, but in talking with our board counsel, Shelby Betts, kind of, we've decided to approach this in a couple of ways because I think it's always good to review corporate governance. We had a semi-formal corporate governance initiative five plus years ago, and I'm going to dust that off and make sure that we share kind of some of the work that was done then with the board. But I'm forming an ad hoc committee on corporate governance so that we can address the specifics in the general counsel's letter, which included the adequacy of board training, the access to board counsel, and just some other best practices for boards. And then, so this ad hoc committee, which will be myself, Michelle Ballady, and Larry Bruning, will kind of dig into more. And I thought having two new board members would be especially helpful. They both have some other, quite a bit of board experience. So they've had seen how other boards operated. They've also recently just gone through the board training, so I think they're probably in a better position to kind of evaluate that piece of it. And then we're going to send out a survey to all the board members just to solicit your input to see if you have comments, if you have suggestions, so we don't have to limit ourselves to what was in the general counsel's letter. We want to make sure that we do get those, but just to take this opportunity to shore up just board operations and oversight of the association. And then the last one I sent to y'all just a minute ago, I didn't want to be presumptuous until we had the vote on the officers for 2021. And thank you all for talking with me briefly just about your interest and willingness to serve on some committees. I don't know that I want to belabor it by going through it. I think, I guess I would just ask you if there's anything that is not in keeping with our conversation, please let me know and we can make some adjustments. The one thing I'll point out, and I apologize, John, I will send it to you here in just a second and you can distribute it to the rest of TDI. Again, I mentioned that we're gonna have this ad hoc committee on corporate governance. We also are reinstituting the claims and legal committee. We had disbanded it as a standing committee a year or two ago, just because we had had such a reduction in the number of incoming insolvencies that there really wasn't a whole lot for the committee to do. I think we see an uptick in insolvency, especially from the non-standard companies. And then with the change in leadership of the claims organization, it seemed like a good time just to really have the board and a little more involved and just monitoring the claims operation. So I appreciate Mark T's willingness to chair that committee and other members to serve. I guess we will, I don't think it would help anybody for me just to read the whole thing to you, but I did provide it by committee and then by board member in the attachment. So I hope that everybody's pleased with that, and I look forward to a productive year in 2021 of getting a lot of things done. Does anybody have any questions or comments on any of the executive committee items? All right, then hearing none, we will move on to item number 7. And I guess, John, are you gonna present or Tiffany?
It sounds like I'll present, and I'm happy to do that. Good morning, everyone. So on the screen right now on Zoom, you'll see the actual agenda / minutes from our Finance Audit Committee meeting. And as Marvin mentioned, and actually I just need a scroller. Can I have that mouse? Here it is, thank you. Didn't see that. Okay. So as Marvin mentioned, we are going to go through these 7 areas. And what I plan to do is walk through the minute components along with you all. As he mentioned, in September, we did our first cut of the budget. At that meeting, a comment came up with regard to merit increases. We rejiggered the budget accordingly, did our study, and we collaborated with HR with regard to studies of merit raises, et cetera. And we came up with a 2.7% increase. for the merit pool, which was reflected in the new budget that was run. You'll see here on the page that's present on the screen right now, overall, our budget for 21 is nearly a 2% reduction from our budget of 2020. So we're pleased with that. There are some nuances as to why that is, some of which were one-time type items or one-time type expenses that were incurred with IT and facilities, et cetera. I'm happy to go through any of the explanations with regard to the shift as relates here. So if there's any directors that have questions with regard to the items, as far as the shifts go, we talk about salaries and some of the shifts there. Really generally flat from 20 to 21, a nearly $30,000 increase. And there's various and sundry reasons there. We did have, we did make some methodical analysis with regard to some of our budget items, be it education, travel, and professional meetings. As we know, 2020 was a bust. We did some speculation as to when some of those on-site type meetings would commence again in 21, so we budgeted accordingly there. But that being said, we're looking at another reduction line there because of the effects of 2020 and our movement to 21. We had a 50% reduction in contract labor. Audit fees, there is a bit of a reduction, and it actually could be even a larger reduction to that. That's mostly because the audit in large part is going to be done remotely. And just as an aside, and we'll get to it, interim work was done very seamlessly, and the team really pitched in a great way to download documentation for Plant Moran, and that worked out very, very well. So I'm pleased with that. And then we move into leasehold improvements, furniture and equipment, computer systems. In 2020, from a computer system standpoint, we had a new server, and we had some laptop acquisitions, et cetera. Those are kind of like one-time items that won't exist. And telephone, we're showing a slight increase. If we go to basically the comparative of our projections, it's great news. And again, this is generally a flat position. We're projecting 2020 to fall out at around our reduced 2021 budget. So I know that when I had the discussion with Mike Garrick and Tiffany Reiner, they were pleased to hear that. I had to recheck my eyes when I looked at those numbers and said, what's going on here? Because they're basically flat, which is nice. So I'm going to pause there. Are there any questions with regard to the 2021 budget? With none, I'm going to move on to the second item in the Finance Audit Committee report. And I did make mention of it, and Marvin did articulate that attachments B, C, and D are really reflective of our audit plan, and is tab B. And in that audit plan, it includes those internal control tests that were selected by the audit committee to perform. And then exhibits C and D are representative of engagement letters that were effectuated before any work commenced. And that's a two-part deal. That would be the internal control work, and it would be the financial statement audit. Any questions with regard to Plant Moran? Super. With IT, I'm actually gonna move away from this agenda and actually bring you all to that exhibit, because I think it would be helpful to see it in print. So if I scroll down, Stephanie, I can get there, right? Yeah, okay. Just bear with me, apologies. There?
On that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And roll down.
Glasses. Yeah, I had to put my glasses on. Okay, thank you, Stephanie. Appreciate that. There we go. It's tough having to wear glasses. Apologies, folks. Okay, so for the IT report, kind of twofold here. And really what we want to talk about is the infrastructure changes that have taken place with the advent of COVID and the movement to VPN and new access. We've actually done encrypted user access and multi-factor, et cetera. So that's proved to be a good move to make. And we've implemented a new VPN structure that again is a two-factor authentication as well. So that's moving certainly in good stead. Let me go back to the agenda. There we go. Apologies. Okay. Any questions with regard to IT? Okay, good. You'll see in number four, the historical assessments, distributions and recoveries. As we know, we haven't had any assessments in a good 7 or 8 years. And we'll talk about it in cash flows. We're not anticipating anything in the near term there in those particular exhibits under attachments F and G. You'll see the distributions and recoveries. Nothing of huge interest or change from last quarter. Any questions on the historicals? Super. So the 5-year cash flow, I'm happy to walk through the model, but I can give you the download here. The one thing that we've obviously done, and to build from our discussion that we have with impending receiverships, you'll see that when we did the cash flow analysis, we considered those up and coming receiverships, and we've noted them here, Houston General Insurance Exchange, as well as ACCC. Those are non-standard autos. We have various models that we've put together that contemplate the cost of claim and the cost of loss adjustment expenses related to claims. Standard auto claim levels are certainly a lot lower than in dollar amounts than they would be with a standard type policy. So we basically throw those into our model, and there's an art and a science to putting that together. We massage that and go through. But what you'll see is at the end of, and like we referenced here, at the end of October 31st, 21, we see that there could be a shortfall. As we know, there are some recoveries that we garner along the way. At this juncture, we're not concerned about that projected shortfall, that we're likely gonna have some recoveries to offset that in moving forward, but nothing of strong consequence from a cash flow perspective. Any questions on cash flow? Great. Okay. So moving on to item six. This is extremely vanilla, but I'm happy to report that it is extremely vanilla. Our portfolio, as you know, is very conservative. While we're not garnering a large return, we're getting a reasonable return, and we are preserving our capital, which is wonderful. We have historically done well at exceeding benchmarks that are included here. So we're pleased with where that's going. I am, as you know, we've got Northern Trust as our custodian, and we've got the two money managers. I speak to the money managers frequently. They're always happy to meet up and discuss what's happening in the quarter, what's happening in the market, things to look for, and they're always open to see if there's any additional reporting they can do for us. We did, just as a quick aside, have a meeting with Northern Trust to further our own internal reporting of their data. So that's been a helpful dialogue as well. So quick pause there. Any questions from the board? Okay, thank you. And then finally, our last item. This is a repeat, you'll see. Very recently, we provided the October reporting. I'm showing September here, so it is old, but and that's typically the train that we take here with regard to this component. But you'll see overall, when we look at the overall budget, we break it down into two pieces: the people or the employment expense. There were, you know, various and sundry reasons why we were over budget by 3.2, mostly because of the reduction in force earlier in 2020, some severance, et cetera, that wasn't planned, and the like, as well as some additional position changes. That overage in budget is offset by administrative expenses, where we've actually had 11.4% favorable. But overall, at that year-to-date position, budget to actual, we are in a favorable 1.2% position, so pleased with that. Tiffany, I'm not sure if there's anything I've missed that you want to add. Any questions from board?
John, I had just one question. Going back to the audit plan, what do we typically do? Because I was looking at that TDI letter. Do we typically, have we been historically using that same firm? Have we rotated firms?
So the issue, Plante Moran has been the external auditor for a number of years. There was a predecessor firm that was acquired that resulted in, you know, the Plante Moran relationship. The partner on the account, there was a period of time, you know, prior to my joining the association where the partners would rotate. It's not a requirement. Obviously, we're not an SEC client requiring, you know, rotation of partner. We are fortunate to have the same existing leadership on that team, be it the senior manager and partner. So that's been helpful from an efficiency standpoint of the audit. Our fees, you know, just coming from the outside in my mind, our fees are very, very low for what we get. We could certainly go out to bid if we wanted to see what the market would offer. I'm open to dialogue about that with Tiffany, by all means. That's where we're at.
I was just curious about the process and what we've been doing, so thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Great. And Chair, are we going to have motions for the budget and the audit plan?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, and so Tiffany, do you want to make the motions to adopt the 2021 operating budget and the TP SIGA audit plan? I don't know if she can. If not, maybe Mike can get Mike.
I'll make that motion. I'll make both of those motions.
All right, so Director Garrett moves that the board adopt the 2021 operating budget and audit plan as presented in the board books. Is there a second?
Valdy seconds.
Oh, thank you, Michelle. Director Valdy seconds. Are there any questions or discussion? Hearing none, all of those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed, any abstentions? Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously. All right.
So, Joe Betsy?
Yes?
Can we just wanted to add one thing to Director T. T's question with regard to the retention of auditing firm. There is a TDI regulation on that that the association definitely complies with regard to the retention of auditing firms.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Shelby. All right, we'll now move on to item number 8, the Human Resources Committee. Director Wilson.
Thank you. The Human Resources Committee had its meeting on November 19th, and in that meeting we addressed primarily the issue of the claims director search and the merit increase pool percentages. And the net of it is that before the HRC committee meeting, Mark T and I both interviewed the final candidates for the claims director position. And I won't speak for Mark T, but for myself, I found that both of them were adequately qualified, and I found no disqualifying aspects of their applications. I felt that both of them were sort of undercharged with respect to experience in workers' compensation. The realization is that there's strong support from supervisory staff and claims on that issue. And my view of it is that either one of the final two candidates were qualified and could have been selected. There were some factors that mitigated in favor of one over the other with respect to organizational training and experiences. And I viewed our role as being advisory to Marvin with respect to our interviews and thoughts on the remaining candidates. That's reported in a little bit more detail in the call meeting notes. And I wanted to have Verda go through a little bit of the history on the progress of this search and where we ended up.
Good morning. Well, we started the process back in September, and Jesse, Marvin, and I worked together to make sure that the notice that we were going to use in posting the job reflected what we needed. We posted the job to several job boards, the Austin Claims Association, to LinkedIn, to NCIGF. NCIGF actually shipped it out to all of the members throughout the country. We use LinkedIn and ZipRecruiter as well. We received a total of 58 applicants from the postings. From that, we reviewed all of the applicants and determined 18 that we wanted to seriously consider for as an initial resume screening. From that, we chose 6 to conduct screening interviews with. Those screening interviews were conducted by John D'Amato, Jesse Bowie, and myself. From that, we selected 3 candidates to forward to Marvin. Marvin selected 2 of those that he wanted to meet with in person. And those were the same 2 folks that we boarded to the board committee, and they were interviewed by telephone by 2 board members. We went through the entire process, and ultimately we extended an offer in November. The candidate accepted, and Annette Evans will be our new claims director, and she will start on December 16th, which is my mom's birthday. Next week.
That's my grandma's birthday too.
Any questions? Right.
Yeah, so the next issue that was addressed was the merit pool increase percentages. And as we've just voted on the budget, it includes a 2.7% merit increase pool, and so that's already been taken care of. But for some of the newer board members, I think it would be helpful for Berta to give a little bit of explanation of how the grid shift and the merit increase pool percentages operate, and you know, in specifically what is decided for this year on that.
Sure. The grid shift or salary structure shift is a separate action from the merit increase pool. We arrive at both of them by looking at public data to see what survey companies that specialize in salary surveys and the like, what they are projecting based on surveys that they do for the coming year. This year was a little different because COVID, like it impacted just most other things, it impacted salary surveys as well. So we had fewer responses to look at relative to formulating our projections. But overall, we still got a solid responses that we could look at from Sherman, from other organizations. We ended up recommending a 1.9% grid shift, which means that if you look at the actual salary grid document, the minimums and all of the points along the way, the minimums for the structured document only will shift by 1.9%. That's separate from the merit increase pool. The reason that you always will shift your grid, even in years where you don't make an adjustment with the merit pool, is because you don't want your grid to fall behind the market. So the grid shift itself is 1.9%, and that's consistent with other organizations across the country. The merit increase pool we looked at as 2.7%, and we secured responses that range from 2.4% up to 2.9%. And 2.7 is an average of those, and that is really where we landed for 2021. But we had some difficulties this year, again, because of COVID, there were fewer responses that we could source publicly. Some of the organizations that we have been using in the past have restricted access to their data, and then some companies just basically were postponing making decisions regarding what they were going to do for their 2021 salary increase or merit action. So we didn't have access to that information. But overall, we stuck with the 1.9% grid shift and the 2.7% merit increase.
Berta, it's my understanding that last year the pool was 3%, is that correct?
Right. For 2020, the grid shift was 2% and the pool was 3%. And that has held true for 2019 as well as 2018.
Right.
So the projections for 2021 are slightly less, both for grid shift and for the merit increase pool.
Right. That historical change, I think, is important. This year we had a little bit less insurance industry specific data to rely upon, I think that we made a good compromise in that the data that we did have insurance industry-wise was a little bit less than 2.7%, but we didn't feel like the data was sufficient to just hang our hat on that. I think the important thing to realize also is that the merit pool is discretionary with the management team on the application of it.
That's correct.
Okay. So for the HR management reports, can you address any changes that we've had in staffing since the last board meeting?
Yes, we had two departures from the organization. One is Dee Barksdale, who was the executive secretary for the last several years. And the other was the receptionist that had been with TP Sigma for a few years as well. We do plan to backfill the receptionist position. Stephanie Hernandez, that you met earlier in the meeting, was promoted from another position into the executive secretary position, and we'll be looking to address backfilling her position as well. So our current headcount is 37, and we're approved, our budgeted headcount for 2021 will be 39. So we have those two positions that we need to look at in the future.
Okay. And also for any of the newer board members, there is regular reporting in the board packet on the benefits packages, and that's just there in case we run into discussions over what it is. Of course, you can take any questions you have up with Verda over the details of that. We don't have any further items to report on, I believe, Verda, and so I'll turn it back over to the chair.
Mike, I think you might need to make a motion on the adoption of the grid shift, since that wasn't a part of the budget motion.
It's in the budget.
It's in the budget.
I think we discussed that at the HRC meeting. Shelby, you can contribute as well. I thought that since it was included as a part of the budget, there would not be a need to make a separate motion.
Well, is the grid shift in the budget, though? Certainly the merit pool is. I mean, I don't think this is a big deal. The board could take the position that adjusting the grid shift and, you know, in, consistent with market conditions is management prerogative, but I didn't think the grid shift itself, as you say, is separate. That's not in the budget, is it?
No, it's not.
Yeah. So, I mean, certainly the personnel and the human resources committee studied the or looked at the data that Verda had collected and agreed with her recommendation and so and supported it. If you want to make a motion at this point, that's fine.
Okay, well, I'll move to accept the grid shift change of 1.9%.
All right, is there a second?
I'll second it.
Is that Director Nardecchia seconds? Are there any questions or discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously. And now we will move on to item number 9 and for consideration of impossible action on the claims report. For his last update to the board.
My last hurrah. Good morning. Elroy, thanks, Stephen. You see before you the bullet point summary relative to the third quarter of 2020. To summarize, as you see, during that third quarter, we did have increases in claims. Those claims arose from Windhaven National Insurance Company, Gateway, and American Country Insurance Services, I believe. I think Windhaven went into liquidation in March, and Gateway and American Country, they went into liquidation on August 11th. Also, a company that went into liquidation on August 11th was Houston General, although we have not gotten any claims from them. I think the SDR, they're in the process of, they're really doing some work regarding the computer systems, and we're expecting to start getting those claims in before the end of the year. The original claim number for Houston General was, I think, 2,500 claims, and as you can see, now that's risen to 1,000. Of course, the claims inventory went up during the third quarter. Since then, because we have not gotten any claims in lately, those we've had a decrease up through November 3rd, a decrease in the overall claims inventory, and then litigation. Claims staff did increase as well as it did decrease. Since the third quarter, as Verda discussed previously, during the third quarter, we had a overall net decrease in the unearned premium clients. But as you can see in November, that went up significantly by about close to 1,000%. We got 2,000 unearned premium clients processed regarding the Windhaven National liquidation. We continue to seek out recoveries any way we can. During the quarter, we received $615,000 in net worth, deductible, and subrogation. That's a little bit less than what we're used to getting, but it's still material. We still do a good job in managing our workers' compensation cost containment. As you can see, we received $5.6 million in workers' comp medical bills, and we only paid $1.6 million thanks to our cost containment programs that we use. The big kahuna in all this, as you heard discussed earlier, is ACCC. Literally, that's going to be a major undertaking. The good part is it's a non-standard auto carrier. Since 2013, we have gotten in 27,000 auto claims, 90% of them in the non-standard auto category. So we're very experienced in handling these. I think when we finally get the ACC claims in, we think those are going to run off historically as they always have. During the first year, we're not going to see a lot of claims close. In years two and three, that's when you're going to see those auto claims starting to go away. There will be litigation that's involved in these auto claims. So. Probably in the middle of 2021, you're going to start seeing an uptick in the legal expense. Just for those new members on the board, of course we get what we get. When I first started out here 26 years ago, we were primarily a workers' compensation guarantee fund. In the early 2000s, that changed to medical malpractice claims until tort reform took care of that. With the hurricanes of Rita and Ike, we became a property company, and now it's non-standard auto. So we get what we get. We learn how to handle it. Fortunately, we have a small core staff it's really not much that they haven't seen, and they're able to transition those and get those claims handled in an expeditious manner. So I really feel confident that when ACC comes in, that's gonna play out the same way. I will address any questions that you have.
Jesse, I have a question. The staffing counts are provided as of November 30th. Has that changed since then?
No.
And between September 30th and November 30th, it appears we have the same number of employee adjusters, the same number of contract adjusters. How does that mesh with the increase in claims?
Well, our plan is one of our TPAs, they are currently working with ACC employees now in identifying potential claims adjusters that they will hire to address those claims that we anticipate on ACC. Regarding Houston General, I think those claims, depending on the nature of them, I don't think those claims are going to be difficult. I guess the bottom line is, I think that the way we are projecting to handle the ACC insolvency and with the TPA hiring their adjusters, I think that we're going to have enough to adequately process those claims. Now, that's going to be a temporary fix. until we are in a position to transition those claims in to TP-SIGA the way we usually do. So I think when we looked at the numbers, I think our TPA was expecting to hire about 20 adjusters from ACC to handle those claims. And I think that's a pretty reasonable number. So we are going to see increases in our allocated loss adjustment expenses to the TPAs.
Is the cost of the TPA passed through to the estate?
Yes.
Jesse, thank you for your years of service, and I really appreciate what I've seen you do in my years on the board, and I wish you well.
Thank you. All I can say is I'm glad I picked that phone up that February 9th, 1994. Thank you.
Before we go into executive session, I wanted to, I think we may take these out of order. First, we'll go into an executive session with the board and staff. And then we'll have the second part of it will be the board only when we're going to talk about Marvin's evaluation. So before I give the formal announcement, do y'all want to take about a 5 to 10 minute break once I say we're going into executive session so people can run down the hall or grab something and then we'll reconvene, you know, as soon as you can?
Yes.
All right. Okay, so the time is now 10:43 a.m. and is authorized by sections 551.071 and 551.074 of the Texas Government Code. The board will adjourn into closed executive session to discuss and deliberate on personnel matters involving the executive director's annual performance evaluation. The second item we're not going to be discussing anymore, and then to consult with the general counsel and receive legal advice on issues arising out of the Texas Open Meetings Act, the litigation report, and any of the agenda items.
Do we need to do anything to come back in?
I think for this one, we do not need to do anything. We just stay on. You can, you know, turn off your camera if you want to for now. When we go to the board only session, we will hit a different link.
Okay.
We're ready.
Okay, so we're recording?
Yes.
All right, so the time is now 11:53, and the board of the Texas Property and Casualty Insurance Guarantee Association is back in open session. And for item number 10, there are no action is needed from the items discussed in the executive session. And for item number 11, there are no members of the public present, so there is no need to allow the opportunity to make a brief statement. And we will move on to the next item would just be announcements. I think in the board book, the next board meeting is March 3rd. I know that Stephanie sent around the board meeting dates, and I do realize it's very hard to plan out for a whole year, but if you end up with a conflict, you know, just please let her know as soon as possible. And if we have to do some adjusting down the road, we can, but at least we've got something on our calendars for now. And does anybody else have any other kind of announcements before I look for a motion to adjourn? All right. Does someone want to make the motion in a second?
This is Tiffany. I make a motion to adjourn.
Director Reiner moves that we adjourn. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Director Gnardecchia seconds. Any questions or discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
The motion carries unanimously, and the board is adjourned at 11:55 a.m. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
I'll talk to you again. Happy holidays. Happy holidays.
Bye, Jesse.
Bye.
Happy 2021.
Amen.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm going to go get my phone so we can take this pitch.
Let's do it. We won't move. It worked out well. We all cut off.